Hello.
You're
live on air. Yes. Hello, yes. We're here on air for Wheaton Leaks is back after a year. I had some health issues that were stalling me from being able to do the show, but we're back. And special guest today is science fiction writer Aaron Lale from the Las Vegas Libertarian Party is where I met her from. And we're going to talk to her because today is a very special day in her religious tradition. So she's going to explain to us a little bit about her faith and her new book and her involvement with the Libertarian Party. So I was going to start out, I was going to ask, Aaron belongs to a religion that I know something about but not a lot, and that many people are probably unfamiliar with, and I'm going to pass the mic over to Aaron so she can explain in brief sort of what that's about.
Hi, this is Aaron talking. Okay, today is Yule. It's the winter solstice, and my religion is called Ossetru, which is a heathen religion. You can picture, all the religions of the world, and then, you know, picture the pagan ones, and then kind of picture like the northern half of the pagan ones, that's heathens, and then within that there's little different sects, and Ossetru is one of those. And on the winter solstice, which we call Yule, we do a whole thing that you probably think of as being Christmas. We do the tree, and we set out milk and cookies for Santa, except we think he's Odin, and he has an eight-legged steed instead of eight tiny reindeer, and we set out straw in a stocking for his eight-legged steed Sleipnir, and we have wassail, which is spiced cider, and we drink and toast, and that's Yule. And we sing, and we might have a campfire. So that's what Yule is all about. It's all about coming together as a family and a community, and we exchange presents. All of that is heathen. Everything you think about Christmas, except for the actual Christ part, we do all of that. It's the same date, yeah. Right. It's the same date as Saturnalia, except that's our thing is not exactly the same as Saturnalia, because we're from the heathen religions look back towards Germania, and Saturnalia is a Roman holiday, so they're not exactly the same culture. But they're both celebrating the winter solstice, which is the shortest day of the year. And in the far north, where the heathen religions come from, the sun never rises on the winter solstice. It stays dark all day above the Arctic Circle. Yule is all about keeping the light going, with the Yule log and the lights on the tree and candles and all of that. That's all about keeping the light going while there's no light in the sky. Suna is the name of the sun in our religion, and Suna is a goddess that Suna and Mani, the sun and moon, they have a chariot that they drive the sun and moon across the sky. That's what it says in the mythology. Now, of course, you know, we know that these days we know the sun is actually a big, you know, ball of nuclear fire in space, but that's okay. We can believe in science and do our pagan stuff at the same time. So we do. Okay.
Okay, I was going to ask the next question is, I have noticed that a lot of, I was pronouncing it Asteru. What's the connect for this? Ossetru. I've noticed that there are a number of heathens or practitioners of Ossetru who are libertarians. Do you know why that is, or can you answer what the relationship is?
Well, part of the reason for that is because the heathen religions, they look back towards different cultures and different time periods over a course of about 1,000 years from about the Roman era, Germania, up to about the Viking Age. But in all of those cultures, personal freedom and honor were these things to have. That was what society was all about, was to get as much freedom and honor as you could, rather than necessarily getting as much money or power as you could, although those things were nice too. And of course, you know, the Vikings went raiding for money, but they also went raiding for personal honor, to be respected warriors in their community. So we're looking at a religion that has a moral system based on a culture in which the highest and best thing that you can possess is freedom and honor, rather than the highest and best thing that you can possess being money or power. So that's why Asatru attracts the same kind of people that the Libertarian Party attracts.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, because I know that I'm also, my big thing is I'm a vegan, vegan libertarian, and there's a certain argument that it is of best to be a libertarian rather than leftist vegan for certain reasons, I feel. But okay, so you have a new book coming out, and we're going to let you plug your new book right now, and we're gonna find out about Aaron's new book that's coming out.
Yay, I get to plug my book. That means I'm at work right now. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, my latest book is a novel called Planet of the Magi, and it's a science fiction novel that's kind of a space fantasy, and it's a book that would appeal to Star Wars fans. It's got the whole good versus evil thing, and main character that develops magical powers, and you know, yeah, all everything that you want from Star Wars, with like laser swords and ships and serious moral choices to be made, except that it's more sort of paganish, whereas Star Wars is more Buddhist or Taoist. So yes, I did see the new one. I saw The Last Jedi last night, in fact, and I liked it. I know a lot of people online just absolutely hated it, but I liked it. And you know, I think one of the things, you know, people in my generation, that we have to keep in mind that when we go see a Star Wars movie as a 40-something or 50-something, we can't expect it to have the same emotional impact as seeing the original when we were impressionable children. But nothing is ever going to equal that experience. You can't walk into the theater expecting to be blown away like you were when you were 7, because it's not going to happen. So that's my take on it. You know, just enjoy it.
Actually, I felt the new Star Wars. I made a mistake of watching it stoned, so I found it difficult to follow in that, you know. But they took risks with it. I'll give them that much. But yeah, so okay. So that's that. So the new book is. So what's like the storyline of the new book? Can you tell us about? Yeah.
Well, the basic idea is. The main character is a young woman who is born on a planet, the planet of the Magi, where everyone is expected to grow up to be a dark wizard. Everyone is expected to grow up to use black magic and be a dark wizard, And she rebels. She doesn't want to do that. She wants to be a white witch. And she has to get off the planet in order to go study that. And like the entire first third of the book is her trying to get off her planet and how she has to make all these really bizarre decisions about how she's going to do that. And she finally manages to like get a place on a spaceship and get off the planet so that she can start making her way to the school she wants to go to. And about halfway into her first voyage, she realizes that she's on a slave ship, and that's a problem. So and then it just kind of goes from there. She starts out with really great intentions, and everything kind of spirals for her. And she does eventually like learn the magic that she wants to learn. And then right when everything is going really great for her, she finds out that prophesied return of this alien enemy that her people, the Dark Wizards, were created to fight is like right now, and they're coming back, and it's time for her to like fight them, except she doesn't want to. So there's another choice she has to make. And she has to decide whether she's going to go back to her planet and fight or not. And if she fights, can she win? Will her good powers be enough to fight them, or will she have to go back to using evil powers? So that's the basic idea of this book, and I think that's something that will appeal to a lot of people.
So yeah, so where can people pick this up? It's going to be on Amazon and all that. It's under Aaron Lale, Planet of the Magi. Okay, so you had to deal with Augustus Sol Invictus twice. Think about this.
Yeah, well, one of the things about being an authortruer and a libertarian is that I get compared to other heathens who are also famous for being libertarians. And unfortunately, besides me, the two most famous political figures who are either members of the Libertarian Party or just, you know, kind of libertarian-ish and who are heathen, although not authortruers, are Halloran and Augustus Sol Invictus. And yes, lovely people. I didn't forget about him. You know, when he was running, I thought it was cool that, you know, for those who don't know, Halloran is this guy in New York who is a Theodsman, not an Ossetruer, but a Theodsman, and that's Theod is a different sect, so it's a different heathen religion, but he's still heathen. It's kind of like the difference between the Baptists and the Episcopalians. You know, they're not really the same, but they're both into Jesus. Yeah. So I had actually met him briefly at a festival years and years and years ago, and he seemed at the time to be kind of a straight arrow because he was like, didn't drink, didn't do pot, you know, he was just, you know, for the place that he was and the time period that this was in, that was pretty straight-laced. And so my impression of him at the time was favorable, and then later on when he decided he wanted to get into politics, I was like, oh, that's cool, you know, like, and then he won his seat, and I was like, yeah, that's cool, that's great, yay. And then he turned out to have some crime problems. yeah, that's just so thrilling. And like the entire time that I was running the first time in 2010, I was constantly being compared to him in the pagan press because we were the two most famous libertarians or libertarian-ish people who were also heathen. And then he did his thing. Yeah, that was just so thrilling. And then the other one, Augustus Sol Invictus, he's not a heathen. He's a, he's a Thelemite. So he's a different kind of pagan altogether, but still a pagan and, you know, still,
He actually self-identifies as a heathen, and he was kicked out of the OTO, which is a distinction that he and I actually share, but... So what's that like having to be compared to, Augustus?
Well, if I was ever planning to run again, it would be a problem, but I'm not. So it's not really a problem as long as I never intend to ever run again ever. And I don't. So, there's a lot of things that aren't really too much of a problem as long as I don't intend to run again. Yeah, and you know the reasons that I never want to run again have nothing to do with either of them. Though basically, I'm a natural introvert, and I like to make speeches. I like to be on the radio. I like to write things, and I kind of think of myself as a thinker. You know, there's all different kinds of libertarians. There's thinkers and plinkers and drinkers. And, I've done a few of those other things too, but I kind of think of myself as a thinker, and I enjoy analyzing issues and writing about them. But I really did not like some of the things that one has to do in order to run for office as far as how much people time I had to put in, especially the second time that I ran, the election was in 2013, and I had been like constantly running since fall of 2011. So by the time the election was done, I was like, yeah, I lost, yay. Now I can go home and pet my cat.
You know, Aaron, priorities are very important. Yeah, so, okay, so that's, all right, we got 10 minutes left. How are we going to fill the last 10 minutes? maybe you can talk about cats.
Well, as it happens, I actually can talk about cats. In fact, I've written an article called Cats in Science Fiction that you can read on the website of Perihelion Science Fiction Magazine. And this is an award eligible article, which means that if you happen to be a Hugo Award voter, you can nominate my article in the related works category. So go to Perihelion Science Fiction website and read my article. It's cool. You'll like it. And also, one of the three Time Yarns Universe anthologies that I edited and published, which are all multi-author anthologies, is called Cat's Cradle Time Yarns, which has stories that are all featuring cats. It's a cat-themed anthology of science fiction and fantasy stories. Cat's Cradle Time Yarns. It's all cat-related. That's right. So if you like cats, You can go read that book of short stories.
Okay, the name of the thing is Cat's Cradle Time Yarn, and it's by which press? That was your company. It's on Amazon. Okay, so we got 9 minutes left. Okay, I'm going to come up with something. Well, what do you think of the new tax cut thing that this the Trumpy's new tax break thing? Do you have a take on that?
Well, we shall see. Time will tell if it has positive or negative effects on the economy or on individual people. We'll just have to see how that plays out.
I was trying to think of scandals. Jill Stein is now being investigated in Russia probe. Do you have anything to say about that?
Ah, comrade. Yeah, that's right. Дело Россия грошни. Let's make Russia great. Look, yes, I do actually. I'm amazed I managed to come up with that off the top of my head. Just I haven't really spoken it in a long time, but I did study it in college, and I actually did a summer language course over in Russia back in the day, which. That was an experience and a half. It was still the Soviet Union then. It was 1989, and it was falling apart. It was the Gorbachev era. So it was it had completely descended into chaos. Real anarchy. You know, the Soviet government was still there, and you could still technically. Legally be arrested for espionage for photographing a bridge, and yet the street crime was incredible. I've had some experiences here in the United States too, but nothing compares to the level of street crime they had over there while the Soviet Union was on its way down, and. The street gangs owned the city at night. I studied at the University of Kalinin, which is kind of a medium-sized city. Kalinin is now Tver. It went back to its old name. The cops literally left the street at sunset, and the motorcycle gangs took over the city. And they would roar up and down the street with AK-47s over their shoulders. That they got from soldiers. That's the thing. The Soviet Union had some of the most restrictive gun laws on the planet, and they didn't even make civilian arms, except for target shooting and because they didn't make civilian arms, the gangs had military arms. That's how that works. That's how that works. If you're a criminal and you need a gun and there's no such thing as a civilian rifle, you get a military rifle. So they had fully automatic machine guns. Yes, Kalashnikovs, AK-47s. And they bought them from corrupt soldiers who needed to get money to buy food or pay their rent because the money had collapsed. The Soviet Union's money had collapsed, so the money that they were paying their army was worthless. No one could use it to buy food, so the soldiers sold their guns to the criminals. And the higher level soldiers were selling all kinds of arms to the criminals, including tanks and those that where you curved around missiles on the back of them, and everything up to and including nuclear arms. was sold on the black market and disappeared off the radar, and we don't know what happened to all of it. So I would not be remotely surprised if a lot of it didn't end up in Iran or, you know, other places of that nature. And yes, they're all obsolete now, but they're still functional. Yes, you know, if you happen to own a Soviet era nuclear submarine, you could still do some interesting things with it if you felt like it. Yeah, well, you know, speaking as a science fiction writer, yeah, that's interesting. Yes, that's right. Well, I actually wanted to be an intelligence officer at the time. That's what I wanted to do when I went to college. So I'm actually looking at this from the point of view of intelligence tracking. And the United States made a huge mistake by closing the entire Soviet department at the CIA when the Soviet Union fell. That was stupid. That we needed to up our game then so we could track the 17 little countries that they broke up into and find out where all their nuclear arms went. One of the things that gave rise to the instability that we have today is that the so-called peace dividend. That was a dumb thing for us to do.
We got 2 minutes left. Remind me what the peace dividend was, and then we'll say goodbye for the day after that.
The peace dividend was when we closed a lot of military bases and cut the military and intelligence budgets right after the Soviet Union fell. Okay, I want to say goodbye to everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening in. This has been another episode of Wheat and Leaks. We will be back on the air regularly now. I think the place to really check us out, though, is that we're going to be posting a lot of stuff on Minds.com there and Expose Me Too, because I actually make money off that. So, until next time, Aaron, I'd like to thank you very much for being our guest on the show. It was fascinating food for thought for today. And then, okay. Fantastic. So go out and buy her book. Go out and buy Planet of the Magi. Give Aaron some money. Buy her book. And we're done.